like to call to order the regular meeting of the CSD Board of Directors, Wednesday, April 16, 2025. It is 3:30 p.m. Amelia, would you call the roll, please?
Director Booth.
Present.
Director Butler.
Here.
Director Jacob.
Here.
Director Merchant.
Here.
Director Mabee.
Here.
Thank you.
All right. We have a quorum. We will proceed. Next item is a closed session conference with legal counsel, anticipated litigation, public employee performance evaluation of district secretary, conference with legal counsel, existing litigation. We will go into closed session.
And just FYI, I won't be on the first two items. So yeah.
Okay.
Okay.
Good evening, everyone. This is the regular meeting of the CSD Board of Directors, Wednesday, April 16th. We will call the meeting to order. Do we need another roll call, or we already have one?
We already had roll call.
Okay.
Yes, sir.
All right.
Although we should note that Director Booth is absent.
No. Director Booth is absent. Okay. The report back from closed session is that there was no action taken and nothing to report. Item number four, approved resolution R2025-01, honoring Ron Greenfield.
Where are you, Ron?
Come on up.
Yay!
Okay, I'm going to read this.
Okay.
Listen carefully. Look deep into his eyes. I'll hold it. You read it.
You want a holiday?
Resolution 2025-01 is in honor of Ron Greenfield. Whereas Ron began his career with the Rancho Murrieta Community Services District as a utility supervisor on July 26, 2014, and whereas Mr. Greenfield has been a part of the success of the Community Services District, and whereas Mr. Greenfield has endeared himself with many friends and acquaintances in the district and Rancho Murrieta community, and whereas Mr. Greenfield retired on May 2, 2025 after 11 years of service to the residents of the Rancho Murrieta Community Services District, and now therefore be it resolved, the 16th day of April in the year 2025, that the Board of Directors of the Rancho Murrieta Community Services District recognizes, appreciates, and commends Mr. Greenfield for his 11 years of service to the community and district and wishes him well in future endeavors. This is your copy.
Well, thank you.
11 years.
And perfect.
You get a copy of your own.
Thank you, Ron.
Thanks, Ron. Does anybody else have anything they'd like to say, Travis?
Thank you, Ron.
Ron, you do have to stay for the whole meeting, though.
What are you going to do with your time?
Pardon me?
What are you going to do with your time? Are you?
Well, at least for the first 6 months, I'm going to do some chilling and do some traveling.
Oh,
and,
great.
Fishing. Well,
the ladies in the front and I all think that he looks younger already.
He does.
Ron, congratulations.
Congratulations,
enjoy.
Ron.
Thank you. Item five, public comments. The public comments section is for the Board of Directors to receive comments except for brief questions for clarification. No discussion or any action may be taken on any item that is not listed on the agenda. You can comment now if you wish, or you can comment specifically to an agenda item when that item comes up. There is a form in the back. If you would fill it out and give it to Amelia, she'll take them in the order they were received. And
yes, sir. I do
have
public comments.
Some.
Yes.
Okay, ma'am.
The first public comment is from an unspecified individual who would like to serve the district with papers.
My name is Amanda Castro.
And your name? Your name again?
I'm Amanda Castro.
Can you say it into the?
I'm sorry, Amanda Castro.
Go, ma'am. There you go.
Hold it down.
My name is Amanda Castro, and I'm here to serve. I have the names. I need the general manager. I don't know which one. There's no name. Okay. And so I'll.
So, general manager.
Okay, this is. Oh, damn. Okay, this one is. General manager. Okay.
It's almost like an Easter egg hunt, but they're bringing it to us.
Very bad. That's the only manager.
Damn.
I don't know who it's from. Hopefully I get one. I'd be disappointed if I'm left out.
Yeah. You can have mine. You can have mine.
I don't want one.
Okay, and then
you'll get one whether you like it or not.
The board president is absent.
Well, they say a few minutes to him, and
the vice president is here.
That's me. That's
me. Well, you did some of the president, the vice president,
the vice president will give it up. Yeah.
He was here, and he left. How do I contact him?
We're not here to help you contact him.
Okay,
so,
well,
for the people that you have, read off a name. We'll tell you if they're here, and we'll hand it out.
There's, hang on. Okay, this is Stephen Booth, and...
Stephen Booth is the president.
This one's yours, John.
That's
John
me.
Yeah, I just got to put the time that I sent you. It's not
507.
I'm just a server.
No, I know. I know who you are.
So don't,
I know.
Don't kill the messenger. I'm just a server. I'll be right back.
I
know it's done this before the start of it.
Yeah.
I don't know where to go. This is a.
Hand it to
this
you.
Is a.
And in the hallway right now. We're in the hallway.
This is a
okay.
How to do it on the
okay. Which one is you in? That's you? I'm sorry, then. I mean, you can have all your time, but this one is yours. Demo, thank you. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I'm right. Oh, no,
that's right. Okay, you're Randy?
He's Randy.
Okay, he's like, I'm right here. Okay,
That happens a lot.
Okay, I'll just put the time down. Sorry.
Did you not get
I don't know. Well, hopefully she's got to have one down there. Gail, how many are down there?
There's only one more, because Randy's not here.
Steven. No, Randy's here.
Oh, no, Steven. I'm sorry, Steven.
There's two down there.
Oh, okay,
no,
okay.
There's two down there.
Okay.
Gail?
Because I was starting to feel left out.
What?
I used to like you.
We'll make sure.
Now you.
We'll have her go
stop
look at the trunk.
Come on.
Now you know what it's about.
Thank you.
This is not a happy experience.
Oh. I could tell you some stories about this.
You have to look at it as an e-ticket ride at Disney.
Yeah, well, you're right.
And this one is Tim's.
Take his picture.
Come on, Gail, really? Thanks, John.
Page news.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Front page is going to be awesome.
Just get his name right. Spell his name right. Yeah.
Don't apologize, ma'am.
Okay.
Another new experience as a board member.
Could I have the next form, please?
Yes, sir.
Are you sure you want to ask that?
I figured we'd get that
out of the way.
That's what I thought, right? Very good. Our next speaker is Christy Wagner.
Yes, ma'am.
And I passed out a paper to each one of you, but just to read.
Oh.
So.
Oh, thank you. This is more copies for everybody here.
This actually goes with that statement. This is just all the extra paperwork to provide just the back.
Oh, this is all yours.
Yes.
Okay, got it.
Yeah,
thank
sorry
you.
About that.
No. Don't apologize.
Okay. I'll make copies of it.
So I'm just going to basically read the statement that I gave to you.
Okay.
Once again, my name is Christy Wagner. Thank you for having me today. On July 14th, 2022, I purchased 7018 Kalina Lane in Rancho Marietta while owning and living at a home in Roseville. I know many residents here, and I believe it's a great community to be a part of. Unfortunately, I need to bring a problem to your attention and seek a resolution. At the time that I purchased the home, Deb Linder, a tenant, stayed in the residence and was still responsible for all utilities and CSD payments and had signed a month-to-month lease with me. In June of 2024, my tenant moved. I immediately notified CSD to have their water bills for the home sent to my address. I spoke with Beverly, who said that the property was not under my name and that she would have to get the deed and have the bills forwarded to me. On June 2024, she called and said that they had put the property in my name. On July 9th, 2024, I received an underbilled account notice from CSD for $4,656. On that day, I called and spoke with Chris at the CSD. He said that there was a glitch in their system and no bills had been sent out to the resident after August 23rd, 2022. No change in ownership had ever been recorded at CSD at the time of purchase, even though America Title had followed the CSD procedures by sending a copy of the deed and transfer fee payment on July 15, 2022. 2 years of bills were not sent out to me or the tenant until after I contacted CSD. According to Rancho Marietta CSD policy titled Disconnection of Residential Water Services for Nonpayment, after 60 days of delinquency, the resident will receive notices of nonpayment, including a written notice and a three-day notice will be put on the door. Then the water would be turned off, which follows the state of California water policy. Later, I was told by both Beverly and Mark at CSD that due to CSD implementing COVID policies to not turn off water at the time, that I would be responsible for the bill. However, the Rancho Marietta CSD pipeline published on its front page February 2022 that water shutoffs were to resume as of January 1st, 2022. The bottom line, CSD policy was not followed. The CSD failed to record the owner's information from the deed at the time of transfer to sending out monthly bills to the resident to turning off their water and other services when payment was not received. If it was followed, once the water was turned off, the resident and myself would have been aware of the mistake, causing no further late payments on all provided CSD services. This would have been resolved in 70 days. Thank you for your time and consideration.
So is this the first time? Have you been here with the notice prior to tonight?
No.
I just want to make sure.
I've been trying to go through. I actually contacted, like I said, back in June when the tenant moved out. And then I needed the water bills forwarded to where
June
I was living.
Of this year.
I'm sorry.
Last year.
Okay, June.
2024 okay. is
okay.
when
yes.
I got the, yeah, I moved
yes.
in, got the property back. But okay. I've been trying to work through the district to try to resolve it. And I pretty much was told that I had to come here to get that kind of a bill taken care of, that they could not just waive it. And like I said, the response I got was about the COVID policies. Right. I think there was like a meeting with Beverly, Mark, because Beverly came back to me and forwarded Mark's information. I never actually spoke with Mark, and that was the COVID policy. But the COVID policies wouldn't have had anything to do with it because they were already done. So now I'm in this situation. And I just feel like there was a lot of mistakes along the way. And if I would have known, the bills would have been paid. The tenant would have paid. We just didn't know. So I don't know if there's any questions.
Yeah, I don't have any questions, but I'm familiar with it. Marcus discussed this with me, and we were drafting a letter. But I'll take a look at this, and we'll see what how to handle this. Okay.
Perfect.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you,
Christy.
Thanks Thank
for
you.
Coming.
Amelia.
Betty Ferraro has a comment for us.
Mm-hmm. Hopefully, we get papers. You know, keep it going.
You wanted to hide at the podium, or you're hiding him, one of the two.
Will
Betty Ferraro.
Hi, Betty.
7348 Palooza Court. I'm coming here because over a year now, we were notified that we no longer would put our house green waste into our green waste containers. And so we were to stop, and that we were charged, and that would be a credit that we would get back. However, we have not found credit. We have not found anything from Green Waste other than now you have a request by Green Waste to have on your budget an increase of fee. So my question is, had it been resolved and therefore there was no credit to come back because Green Waste did not process it correctly, or is that why they're raising the rates? I don't know. But I don't see where our budget should show it as a rate increase if, in fact, they do owe us money. And so this is where I am, knowing what is Green Waste doing, and does that mean that we can continue to throw the house waste back into the cans because it's more efficient for the environment? So that's
and by Green Waste, you mean cow
Your household.
Cow waste, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
You know, banana peels, blah, 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 blah.
No, I'm just trying to get the name of the... You were saying Green Waste, and you're
waste
referring
management.
To the cow waste contract, correct?
Yeah. I'm sorry, I miscited. Okay.
Would you like me to address that, John? Hi, Betty.
Hi.
So I applied for the waiver back in September of 94, and I think we got it.
24. Yeah.
I'm sorry. Okay. It's a little 30-year time warp there. September of 2024, and got it in October, and I was probably overly optimistic, thinking that that $11 increase to per month per lot could be eliminated and that we'd have huge savings. And I think a preliminary version of a general manager's report that showed that was released, but then it was pulled down because we had a conversation with Cal Waste, who is the hauler, and they indicated that there had been many other costs that were thrown into the bill under the umbrella of green waste or organic waste,
right,
as they call
organic,
it.
Thank you.
And that included a new truck, new cans for the community, and a subsidization of the recycling program, which had become less profitable for haulers in general. And so, in addition, they informed me that after SB 1383, which is the piece of legislation that authorized the separation of green waste from trash, there was a change in the landscape for haulers, and there were no longer as many places for them to dump yard waste that was commingled with green waste. And in addition to that, they had, in addition to having to drive all the way out to Yolo County and back, just like a 3-hour round trip in their big old trucks, the tipping fees jumped from like $5,000 per time to $10,000. And so they didn't have a whole lot of ability to change the rate, but I contacted a local landowner. First, I contacted RMA and asked if they could take any organic waste, tree clippings and branches and whatnot, and if they could chip them and compost them. And they said they could not, but they recommended a local land owner. And I spoke with that individual because he has an extensive composting program on his own land. And he was very supportive and very interested and actually connected me and Cal Waste to this third-party vendor that does composting. And then that was where things were at. And then I was on leave, and I came back, and I sat down with the hauler last Thursday, I think. And he brought me up to speed on where they were at. And that process of dumping locally and having it be composted here, that's going to take a while, but it's probably not going to reduce the overall bill by a whole lot. So that, you know, that part is still being negotiated, how much the actual contract will go down as a result of that. But I think you also referenced another component, which is that the bill is going up for 25-26, or it's proposed to increase. Yes. But that piece is all baked into the contract that was negotiated in 22 to have a cost of living adjustment, like a inflationary adjustment. So that part is sort of separate, but really I'm as disappointed as you are that we weren't able to get that $11 off, because I do feel like 1383 was really burdensome and that green waste was, you know, difficult. And we were lucky to get in under the low pop waiver, the low population waiver, but I think it's going to be not quite the savings that we had hoped for. So
it just sounds like the Cal Waste has not done their due diligence when they made the contract or went with the ruling, and therefore when they found the rate that they had to pay had doubled, somebody had to pay for it because they didn't want to, so they threw it back to the ones that had the contracts, and that would be us. So we're holding the bag of their mistake is the way I look at it. But it's a moot point now. It really is a moot point now.
Yeah.
But it just shows how contracts can be broken without our knowledge, and then all of a sudden we're holding, so called, the bag of green waste.
Well, I do. I think I was probably similarly chagrined, I guess, by Cal Waste's inability to reduce costs further. But I, having spoken to them and having, you know, kind of seen everything that was put into that contract, and we negotiated that contract. I mean, not yeah. me, I wasn't here, but so they are being faithful to a contract that was executed by the district. But I feel a little bit of compassion for them, because I think that the piece of legislation was authorized without much interaction with the haulers throughout the entire state.
Yeah.
You know, and so I think it's a burdensome piece of legislation, a burdensome policy, even though I think, you know, probably the intent was good. I think people could probably do better just composting on their own, as opposed to having to eliminate, you know, all the regional dumps that would accept green waste. So hopefully there'll be some lessons that come out of this from the, you know, the state level.
Well, I think that also as a community, when they said we're going to give you new cans,
yeah.
we didn't need new cans.
They all again, that they had no choice.
No,
the
but I'm,
legislation
I'm just
that Mimi's talking about.
I'm just saying how the community felt, because you looked at your cans and you're paying for and not knowing what the rule was.
Right.
Then them saying that inside your house they were going to give you another can to put this in. Well, we didn't get that either. So that put for the community a little eyeball up here that says, you know, are they doing what they promised to do, and we're trying to, you know, do what we should be doing. But as I said, it's a moot point now. Thank you for the education. But now we can let that one go and go on to bigger and better things.
The one takeaway you should keep in mind with that is, and I haven't done it recently, although I know there's an escalation in 2025, comparative rates for county service have done, the performance there has been pretty much the same, because they're all pretty much
yeah.
subject to the same laws. So back as far as, I think it was 2005 when we signed that first contract with Jack Fiore, I mean, you know, we've been competitive, and I think overall the service, as those of us who've been here a long time would understand, the service comparatively to what we were getting from the county was like night and day.
Yeah, and I know that he came out every time there was a budget, and then he again went over why he wanted more money and what he was going to do. I haven't come to the board meetings now because I'm retired, so therefore I've sort of stayed away. So I don't know if he's still doing that. Does he come all the time? So that would be where I'd come in and ask his questions.
I know he's been here at a minimum once a year to do his annual report. Right.
I'm a representative from Cal Wave.
Yes, so you are.
I have no here, but I don't know if this is the time for me to speak, but I'm saying we are here. We do understand the community's concern. 20%, we've been talking to Mimi and some other board members, and we're trying to come up with a solution here.
Okay. It was just,
I don't know if you want me to come up there and talk or.
Yeah, this is on the agenda, but for much later, Betty. So, yeah, if you wouldn't mind just talking about it now, I think that could help to address it. You can validate my comment about my irritation and then my compassion later.
Thank you, Betty.
So, hello, board. Hello, community. My name is. Oh yeah, I'm Rudy Vacareza. I'm a representative of Cal Waste. We're a family-owned business. It's me, my dad, and my brother that own and operate the business with a great team of people. Like John said, Jack's been here in the past before. I have been in front of the board many times. But some of the things related to the, they call it residential organics collection requirement, where now you have to put the, I think this is, hear me here, your food waste in your, what used to be your green waste cart, which is now, they call it an organics cart. So the low population waiver changed in October of 2023, and the requirement to institute the program, it had to go into effect of January 1 of 2022. We actually got a year reprieve from the state to, we were in negotiations talking to the district at the time, and we instituted the program in January 1st of 2023. Those requirements at the time, you had to have a population of less than, I think it was 9,000 to be eligible. And then once we already instituted the program, you know, us as the board negotiated the contract with, or us as the hauler negotiated the contract with the board, we went into effect in January. They changed the requirements of that low pop waiver in October of 23. So it was 9 months after we actually started the program. So that's when I think a few months or maybe a
Yeah, I didn't find out about it for almost a whole year.
A few months, yeah, about a year later, Mimi found out about those requirements. You know, a lot of those things are buried in about 1,200 pages of state legislative documents that, you know, to be frank, I'm a garbage man, not a legislative contract reader. But when Mimi was informed about it, we started talking with her how we could walk the program back. But when we instituted the program, you guys, or the community was 100% eligible in those requirement structures. And unfortunately, after we started the program, the state changed the rules on all of us. So we're trying our hardest to work with the board and staff to figure out how to walk as much of it back as we can. So hopefully in the next, as soon as the board wants to take action on that. And yes, there is a rate increase that's coming up, but as Mimi said, you know, that's built within the contract where, you know, we get roughly 2 to 4%. It's like a CPI based index every year. It's more of like a cost of doing business, insurance, employment, those types of things that we do need to go for now, that I think the board has in their finance packet, but I think at the same time we're pretty close to, you know, coming up with a cost reduction element at the same time as the potential rate increase. So we're trying. I mean, we've been in this community for 25 years. We tend to. We're a locally ran company just down the street in Galt. And, yeah, I feel like I'm babbling now. So yeah. I don't know. I'll stop.
Okay. No, thanks, Rudy. We appreciate it.
Anyway. And we do have another public comment. Thank you so much. I want to say it's Tom Harry.
Hi, Tom.
Hey, how you doing, John? Thank you, Tom Harry, 14709 Guadalupe Drive. First, I want to thank the board for your efforts and work. I appreciate it. You guys, it's a hard job, and you guys do it well. Couple of comments on the water master plan draft that's been floating around, debated, talked about. People have made a lot of testimony, and I've read the plan myself. I have two comments and concerns. One is one of the alternatives in the plan to create more water for future development is for existing residents to conserve and cut back. I'm not for that. I don't think it's right. I work in the development world. And by the way, I'm not anti-development. I'm actually pro-development. And I've done worked in the development business for over 35 years, and I know how it works. New development pays for their own impacts. That's how it works in my world, which is the Sacramento, greater Sacramento area. And I feel like people I've talked to, I speak for others. I think I would urge the board, when you adopt this, whatever plan it's going to be, that alternative is removed. I don't think it's fair to existing residents, and development needs to pay for their impacts. I'm pro-water. I am also pro-development, but I'm more pro-water because I live here. The other comment I've heard discussion about is the developers around the lakes, they recanted, they took away their development application on the land around the lakes,
right,
which is great for some. I think it's fine. But it doesn't mean it's gone away. That land is the same as every other bit of development land out here. It's been planned for development. So until there is someone records an easement, a conservation easement or a deed restriction, that land's in play and it has to be planned for in the water study, in our total supply. And I just want to emphasize that. It's gone for now, and if it never happens, great, we'll have extra water, perhaps. But it needs to be planned for in all these calculations. And I've been told, you know, there's not, you know, our reservoirs, our capacity is not as much. Where else can we get extra water? Can we get more repairing up consumers? Doubtful if you could. Where do you store it? It seems like the options that I know of and discuss with people are drilling wells. And that's a tough one up here. And I just want to give the board some history of back in the 90s. The land behind Murrieta, known as Deer Creek Hills now, my family's rented it for over 60 years for cattle grazing. And when C.C. Myers owned it, he went out in the mid-90s and dug 15 wells. Mm-hmm. This one he was going to plan to develop it, and he was going to dig wells, and he was going to ship water down to Wilton and bring it back and all kinds of crazy things. Mm-hmm. Out of 15 wells, he got an cumulative aggregate of 250 gallons a minute. One of those wells was up by Michigan Bar, and that was 150 gallons. The other 14 were 100 gallons a minute. So, and they were down 600 feet. So it's a tough go, and I don't know. You guys have a big... that's the right word. Challenge. Challenge to get it, and I don't know where it is. But anyways, those are my comments on the water plan. I'd urge the board to take that advice and take it in your thing and hopefully not use conservation for existing residents as an alternative.
Yeah, I agree with, and this is my personal opinion, I agree with everything you just said, and particularly what was concerning to me was back when we did the water supply assessment that John Sullivan ordered in 2016. The predicated on the development was essentially forecast to be able. We could create the full development simply by implementing 30% to 50% conservation aggregate. That would create water for new houses. We're talking along the lines now, and I have been since I got into this back going as, all the way back to 2010 with that water plan. That we can't use conservation as a planning tool. Conservation is a reaction to an emergency. It's not. And one of the concerns I had in the report as it stands now is in the mitigation that's discussed in the report, the only really effective way that you can guarantee supply is to take it away from somebody else. And I agree with you. I believe that's unacceptable. So,
it is unacceptable.
Thanks for coming by.
Thank you, sir. Appreciate it.
I have one more comment. Deb Britton.
Britton? Yes, ma'am. I'm so sorry.
Thanks, Deb.
Deb Britton, 6543 Via de Robles. Just real quick.
Are you native Sacramento?
Anyway, y'all are so cute. Anyway, on Christy's behalf, what she forgot to mention was that the property in question that the bill is associated with is scheduled to close tomorrow. So standard method of operation would be that any existing bills would be paid as it was when she took possession of the property, and then it would be transferred into the new buyer's name. And so with that said, if we could make some sort of an exception until resolution of this can be remedy, whatever is going to be brought to the table, and instead of holding up her closing, which would then cause additional undue hardship on her and the new buyer, if rather than leaving that bill assigned to that property, if it could temporarily be reassigned, and I haven't even mentioned this to her yet, but temporarily be reassigned to her current Rancho Marietta residence, until you all can find out whatever resolution you're going to be able to make up for that deficit. So, again, I know it's a little out of the box, but she's been fighting this battle for a minute, and unfortunately, anything that would hold up the closing tomorrow could be detrimental to her.
So the request is that the delinquency be transferred to another property that she
to her current to, yes sir to her current Rancho Marietta residence, correct?
Okay.
Which would then allow the current property to close with title and the normal procedure
and then
to go
the lien
on.
Would be on her current property on her.
Well, there's not a lien. Well, so there's not a lien now, there's just an outstanding bill. But that outstanding bill, until you all come up with whatever resolution you're going to come up with or propose to her, instead of it staying attached to this property, holding up the escrow closing tomorrow, that instead, again,
so we'd be
understanding that it's already been acknowledged that there was a clerical error that started this from the beginning, that we can make another clerical adjustment with the approval of the board to give some grace to this situation that is extremely unfortunate for all parties involved.
Okay, but if we can't resolve it in the future, ultimately we'd be putting a lien on the property.
Well, and that's normally what your procedure would be, but I'm sure you guys will come to some sort of a favorable resolution for all parties.
Or since she thought of it, it could go to her residence. And
well,
then,
Tim,
you know,
since you're raising your hand with that idea, I'm so glad that you have nominated yourself.
So in the worst case scenario.
Yes, sir.
Assumption.
Yes.
The bill doesn't get paid, and in accordance with our normal procedures, we turn off water somewhere. Where is that somewhere?
You don't turn off water.
That's another.
I don't. Well,
we wouldn't be here today.
We have.
We turn off the water on the property I'm at right now.
Okay.
But at least that way, I haven't been able to. I assumed it was going to get resolved before now. Now I'm in a situation where.
No, I understand.
Now we're trying to.
Yeah. The policies and procedures.
We're trying to work it through. We'll figure it out.
So yeah, if you wanted to move it on, I'm a resident now in your community. I still live there.
Yeah.
You can put it on that property.
He's a lawyer. He'll figure it out.
All right.
Go, Patrick.
we'll figure it out.
Okay. And so just so that I know, because I've got to contend with all of the parties first thing in the morning, who do I need to follow up with on that?
I would say the GM.
That would be me.
Ms. Mimi.
Can I get contact information from you and your email and your phone number and your name and the addresses of the two properties in question, and go ahead and throw Deb Britton's information on there as well.
Thank you, my love.
So would it, in that procedure, would a verbal, if you're in the middle of your closing, can she do that for you verbally?
She can literally pick up the phone and call title and let them know that they don't need to have to worry about that portion
okay,
of the bill.
Okay, fine.
That is correct.
Fine. That works.
And,
we cool?
And the title company is who for this transaction?
I'll write that down for you.
Okay, awesome.
Yes, ma'am.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Anybody?
Well done.
Thank you.
She's
real estate people.
I know.
So demanding.
Yeah. It's.
So, are we, Amelia? While you're doing that, are there any more public comments?
No, there are no more public comments.
Okay, so we can move on to item six, which is the consent calendar. Are there any items that any board member would like to pull out?
I need to pull out the improvements committee meeting minutes, please.
Okay. You want to go ahead then, Randy?
Yeah. Apologies to Amelia. I caught a mistake in here in these minutes a couple days ago, and I meant to get back to her before this got printed, but I didn't. So in those meeting minutes, item two, where you say that that their desires are to create a new easement on the golf course property is incorrect. It's the easement is just moved to a new location on the same property.
Thank you very much. I'll bring that correction to next month's meeting.
Okay, and it was. We had it up on the. It was.
You had the.
It was up on the map and everything else. It was pretty clear.
Yeah. Okay.
Okay.
I noticed that too.
Anything else? Can I get a motion to approve the consent calendar?
I need to approve the consent.
Are we approving everything except those minutes and bringing those minutes?
Yes,
back?
With the then I'll. Yeah. I'll amend that to with the exception of the correction to the improvements committee minutes.
I'll second it.
Thank you, Director Merchant and Director Mady. Roll call vote. Director Booth is absent. I won't call for him again. Director Redler.
Yes.
Director Jacobs.
Aye.
Director Mady.
Aye.
Director Merchant.
Yes.
Thank you.
Item seven, review district meeting dates and times for May. Anybody have conflicts with any of the dates that are posted?
I got one,
you
Amelia,
have one.
Yeah.
But it's not for May. April 22nd, Parks Committee meeting.
April 22nd, you accepted the...
I did, but just so everyone knows, because it's late
in.
Notice to add that it be here.
It's not, be here.
It's not on the list.
Oh. It was on the list for April, but I...
Oh, was it?
Yeah.
Okay.
Uh-huh.
No worries. Never mind.
Okay.
I was never here.
And I don't know if we'll have one in May yet, a Parks Committee.
It's offered number two.
Okay. Perks.
Okay, we're all set.
Thank you. Thank you.
Item 8, correspondence handout from Janice Eckerd from April 8th. Any comments?
No.
Okay. Move on. Staff reports, general manager's report first.
Okay, thank you. Prior to returning from administrative leave on Monday, March 24th, I listened to dozens of hours of district meeting audio to get up to speed on the activities of the district. Upon my return, I went through hundreds of emails sent to my district account for that same purpose. I asked to be included in both the ad hoc committee tackling core district issues and the working group evaluating the IWMP, but was told by Vice President Merchant that the ad hoc was no longer meeting and that the working group was being limited to just 4 people. Several days later, I had a similar experience when my request to be included in the strategic planning process was rejected by Director Butler, saying no staff were involved in that process. However, I became aware of emails to the contrary that excluded me, despite being sent a few days after my return and instructing staff on their involvement in the strategic planning process. Director Butler has since informed me that the strategic planning process is being postponed indefinitely and that there was no agreement with the vendor, despite the board's approval of the agreement last month. I asked to have the item on this agenda so that the entire board could make such a determination, but the item was removed from the draft agenda. Other emails are being sent by board members which also exclude me, despite my return. These actions make it difficult for me to truly serve as the general manager over the overall management of the district. Despite these transgressions and obstacles, I will continue to work toward completion of required reporting obligations and other projects that require my oversight. These include picking up several items that I had been working on in December, such as the various connection fees from developers and reimbursement obligations outlined in the 2014 financing and services agreements, and the potential for fee reductions resulting from the SB 1383 waiver, among other things. I've been providing a variety of reports for Mark and the accounting team for the audits, gathering data for our required GASB reporting in both operations and the OPEB trust. I've also been involved in a few kickoff meetings with Cassell, the software vendor working on our eventual conversion from Great Plains. Mark and I also reinitiated conversations with Tyler Technologies to secure a refund for payments in November 2022 for almost $40,000 in financial system software that was never implemented or used in 2022-23. The software provider agreed to our request for the elimination of those same fees in 2023-24, establishing the precedent for the prior year. We are awaiting a decision on this item. In short, I've jumped right back into the core issues that I can work on despite my exclusion from other key areas of district management. However, the board's exclusion of me from these important issues and events makes my work here difficult, if not impossible. Thank you.
Okay. Finance and administration report / security report. Are you going to do that?
Yes. Mark Matulich is sick today, so I'm stepping in on that. Essentially, what you have in this packet is what was presented at the Finance Committee meeting just last week. And you can see in 24-25, the current fiscal year, through the end of February, the district had a net operating loss of $132,000. This was primarily due to some unexpected large-scale repairs, including a 33-inch water pipe that was $255,000. And a need to repair the recycled water pipe on the Yellow Bridge under the sewer category for $35,000. There was also an area of faulty wiring between the drying bed lift station and the junction box that was another $28,000. We've also had a jump in legal fees with $135,000 through February 2025, with $133,000 coded to admin overhead. This is approximately $90,000 over budget and admin, which resulted in additional unanticipated overhead allocations for legal expense to water and wastewater of $47,000 and $24,000, respectively. I want to move to the state of the accounting. Mark went through a very extensive report of all of the achievements that have been accomplished over the last, really, 18 months, 15 months, and Gail did a nice job of capturing all that in a recent article, and I'm grateful to both of them for helping to get the word out about what has been accomplished, because I know with audits, it's very often intangible. It's hard to see it. It's hard to see that anything is actually being done. But there have been extensive improvements on the overall system. And the 21-22 audit is in progress and close to completion. And the two temporary accountants are working on 22-23 and 23-24. And they are basically working almost as if it were like an open heart surgery where it's on bypass. And they're creating all of the they're recreating all of the transactional data, and then that is existing in a separate system that will be reincorporated into the financial body as soon as we close 21-22, and then it'll go 21-22, 22-23, and 23-24. And if things go well, we hope to be done by the end of June. And then 24-25 has all been properly loaded into Great Plains, and it won't need to be recreated. We just need to have all of 23-24 done to have an ending balance amount before 24-25 can be, before that audit can be started, which will probably be closer to September. A draft of the 25-26 proposed budget was presented last month, or even I think the month before, and the Prop 218 notices have been mailed. And we've had, as I mentioned, two implementation calls with Cassell. We have another one tomorrow. And we're beginning to provide them with information to facilitate the build-out of the district's future full-service accounting system, which will likely not be in place until fiscal year 26-27, just due to the time that it takes to actually do a conversion like that. And then this report also shows that as of March, we had interest and investment earnings of almost $560,000. And the 25-26 budget was proposed last month. I don't know if what happened in February, if there was a report on that as well, but it was definitely talked about last month as well, and there were decisions made about increases of reserve fees of $2 in water and $2 in wastewater, plus the aforementioned increase for Cal Waste based on the consumer price index, and then the 2% increases that are authorized for drainage and security, and a base usage of about 3.5% for both water and wastewater. And there is the budget to actual report, which kind of lays it all out by fund. And I'm happy to answer any questions about the finances.
I have one, John.
Go ahead.
So on the 24-25 audit, that'll actually be what could be a standard timeline of completing audits moving forward, right? If I understand how we've laid everything out, so however long workload it takes, that should be the new baseline for our audits moving forward, correct?
Yeah, we'll be all caught up. We okay. get back on track, and generally audits begin, you know, 3 to 6 months after right. the close of the fiscal year. So if it's a 6/30 close, you know, you'd be looking at September through maybe December to get started.
Okay.
And then because it's clean, or, you know, much cleaner than all those prior years when the accounting was
right.
in a mess, it shouldn't be too problematic.
Okay. Perfect.
And
you.
I think there was one other nice announcement that the auditors plan to look at 22, 23, and 23, 24 simultaneously.
Right.
So that'll really help it to get across the finish line.
Got
yeah.
it. Thank you.
Uh-huh. Okay.
Okay.
We can, that's all I have on finance, but we can move to security. And I don't really have too much that's readily shared about security, although it does look like speeding was down significantly in March compared to prior months. So that's good. That's very good. But I'm happy to answer any questions if anybody has any questions about finance or security.
And we security. Should be taking public comment on all three of these. So, yeah.
Yeah, do you have?
I don't have any. I would have.
Yeah, I know you
would have
waved furiously if there was one. Yes. Okay.
All right.
Anything further on finance and security? If not, Travis, are you the stand in for Mr. Eric?
Yes, I am. Thank you. We'll start off with the water treatment facility. For March, the production we produced 25,751,000 gallons for the month of March. All water was produced through Plant 1. Plant 2 is currently offline. We're having the filter rehab project. We'll be discussing that a little bit later on in the board in regards to where that project is at the time. Water consumption as of March 31st, 2025, the total potable water production of 2025 was 74.1 million gallons or 227.6 acre feet. Raw water storage, you can see the data down here. Clementia is showing over 100% because it's been spilling due to the rain. Calero kind of spilled a little bit due to the rain. I didn't leave enough room in there, so it just kind of spilled a little bit. We currently have the boards were put in, the batter boards, so we can, once the CIA ditch is repaired, we'll be turning the pumps back on Sunday and start pumping back into the lakes. We have the 40-inch valve at the forebay open to keep water from flowing down the ditch. So we haven't been able to pump. We were full, so we're only going to miss a couple days of pumping.
Right.
But we're still on track to.
So is that consistent? Like last year, I know we maxed out Calero, I think, in particular, at 111%. Is that about average?
Yeah, because when we do the reporting after we put the batter board, after we put the boards in, we just report it over 100%.
Right.
And so with the boards in, they raise the lakes up 2 feet.
Okay.
So.
Okay.
So I don't know how Eric's going to report it. I give the percent fulls to Amelia every week, and she puts them on the website. And so, you know, starting Sunday when we start pumping, you'll start to see over 100% full. And that way, we'll go up to, we tip off. I usually take it up to like a quarter inch to the top of the batter boards, you know, because if we get wind, I don't like to waste. But we'll usually.
Do you actually measure that?
Yeah. I actually do. I actually have staff go over there and do it. Usually like around the 1st of May, we'll play top off throughout the month. And then also once we get Calero and Chesbro topped off, then we'll do any top off in Clementia that's needed. And then just, you know, play fill up till the end of May.
Okay. So on Clementia, you're spilling. Or you were?
Yes, we were. Once we put the boards in, we won't be.
Okay.
Yeah.
Because that's, I just pointed out, because we went through this a couple of times in the process of the story map and everything else, that's all drainage.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so what we do is towards the end of the pumping season, if Calero and Clementia are full, and if there's room in, I mean, sorry, if Calero and Chesbro are full, then I will pump into Clementia so we can top that off. And then we will, like the last week of May, we'll just play top off on, right, on the two ones that on Calero and Chesbro.
Okay.
It's kind of a little game that I play with the lakes. So far it's worked out.
Yeah.
So.
Okay.
And with the wastewater, we are about 4 million gallons more than what we were this time last year. So we're doing good there. We have an average influent flow of about last month of about 500,000 gallons a month. And so by the time we're ready to get the plant turned on, we'll have plenty of water to send out to the golf course.
Okay.
So we're doing pretty good right now.
Good.
On that. Following the graphs of the lakes and our filling and the storage for you guys to look at. The utility activities for March 2025, we had 4 water leaks and repairs. We had 8 reported issues. 4 of them were the 4 of those reported issues were our issues, and 4 of them were the homeowner's responsibility to do. They did repaired or installed 16 new water meters. We did maintenance jetting in the collections. We're just doing our preventative maintenance jetting throughout the district, little by little, section by section. And then we had 30 miscellaneous USA markings for projects for either what we're doing or what other people that needed our utilities marked.
Okay.
So, and our service orders that we have to get done. So.
And I see we've added the actual number of residential meters to the report, which I appreciate.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Cool. Okay.
The under the sewer for the wastewater facility, I wanted to bring up, we had over on Celebrar, right on the corner of Celebrar and Briller Court. The resident there got a call from them the other day. They were having sewage back up. It was backing up into their toilet and everything. And we went out and took a look. They went out and took a look at it. And there's a root buildup and a disconnection of where the two services connect. You can see in the camera that that's come apart. We were supposed to do that repair today, but we had multiple staff members calling sick. James Colas, who's covering the utility staff right now, and Gabe both called in sick, so we only had 3 utility people. And because of the depth, and we have to actually remove some of the sidewalk, some asphalt, some of the homeowner's lawn. It was, they asked me about it. I went and looked at it, and I decided that we just didn't have the staff to do the work safely. I've called in, made a call to Josh at TNT. He's going to send a couple of people out tomorrow. I don't know who's going to or who's not going to show up tomorrow. If we don't need them, because if we get staff, because I know one of them's already not going to be here tomorrow. If we don't need them, we will send them on. But if we do need them, we will be taking 2 of their staff, and they're going to be bringing some equipment, and they're going to be using a lot of our equipment, and some of our staff will be helping. But it's going to be done on a time and materials. I told them that, hey, we need to kind of keep it under 25,000, but and they said that shouldn't be a problem, I spoke with Mimi about it, and she wanted me to at least bring it to the board's attention that's going to be happening tomorrow.
Okay.
Project updates. The water treatment plan 2 filter bed, we'll kind of talk about that a little bit later. It's an agendized item. There's some issues that came up with the inspection, after the inspection, that we're going to need to deal with. The wastewater treatment plant hypochlorite conversion, they are in the process of getting the ground done so they can get the platforms poured for the new tanks. I just got off today with, I have a biweekly meeting with the SCADA people about how for the implementation and the upgrade of the SCADA for that. And they have started on the programming. They've got everything that they need, and they're working on that. The electrical, all the underground electrical was finished today, so that's going to be moving forward. I will be talking with Eric because we're going to have a conversation with the country club, how we're going to get them water temporarily. I know me and Eric have talked, and we've come up with a few solutions. And when he gets back, we will be sitting down and try to finalize some solutions, and then be in communication with the country club moving forward, so they know kind of where we're going with that. Integrated water master plan. I'm just going to read what he wrote because I don't know what's going on with that. He said, the firm is preparing a scope of work that includes the new stakeholders meetings, as well as creating a water vision report. The report will utilize the stakeholder meetings topics and questions to create a path for the future to address water supply and demand issues, as well as meet the needs of the community. The SCADA server replacement for the water treatment plant, we just approved the building of materials, the BOM. They are in the process. I had Andy in the meeting with us today. We got that approved. They've got some of the stuff in, and they're still waiting on some of it, of some of the hardware and the software, and they'll start getting that going. They're anticipating about 2 months before they're ready to get that up and running. Alameda lift station improvements, we have decided to put that off until winter because of the long lead times on some of the stuff that we need. We would be, by the time we got the stuff, we'd be right in the middle of their summer, all their tournaments and stuff, and just the cost alone of having the two porta potties to have there because of the bathrooms closed would be about $15,000. So we thought it was best. We're getting all the stuff. Everything's going to be ready. The panel, when it gets done, is going to get put in. And then once winter comes along, we'll go ahead and do the job. Do it. If for some reason something happens and that we have to do it sooner, we'll at least have everything. And the job itself would only take a couple weeks. But I've spoken with our maintenance person, and I've spoken with everybody, and we feel that that's just the best way to go at this time.
Okay.
So, development, the number of water connections is 2,917. I wanted to just two kudos. Corey Xavier, he will be celebrating his 15-year anniversary this month. And Phil Sargent, he got his water grade 2. I've now got all of my operators have all the certs that they're supposed to have. And I'm working with two of my operators to get their wastewater 3s. And they're scheduled to take their tests for those within the next month. So
very good.
We've got a good crew back there on both sides. And things are progressing really good.
Kudos to you. So,
yeah, good job. Thank you. Good job.
Any questions about that?
Thanks, Travis.
Okay.
Good to go. Thank you, Travis. Oh, Andy.
Hi.
Thanks.
So I've just been working on just a pretty good number of ongoing projects to maintain and upgrade our systems. Travis mentioned the SCADA system over at the water treatment plant. The networking that feeds that, that's part of our Sophos firewall system. We just upgraded the endpoint device there, just basically to bring it in line with the new hardware that was installed over here. This provides the secure tunnel communications that exist between the two facilities. It's basically just one of those things where you want to keep them current so that they're easy to maintain. You maintain high levels of security, things like that. So that was completed recently. As Travis mentioned, we need to replace we're in the process of replacing the SCADA equipment there. As part of that, I'm going to upgrade the laptops that they use and the desktop systems over there as well. We established a new standard for our desktops. We've moved from larger full-size desktop computers to small form factor PCs that are much less expensive, every bit as fast and capable, easier to support and maintain, easier to move around, and quicker to replace. So we've created a new standard based upon this hardware with a new software load that has all the appropriate applications and networking capability and everything to talk to our systems. So that standard's been created just like in the exact same way I did the standard for the laptops a number of months ago as we started to roll the first laptops out. So we're in the process now of basically replacing all the desktop systems, all the remaining laptop systems with new systems, with new software, running Windows 11, because we have to be on Windows 11 by the end of October because Windows 10 falls off of support. So that process is well underway. I think we'll hit our deadline there. So that's moving along. With the first small form factor devices are going to roll out in the next couple of weeks, both in terms of new systems for training in the safety center for security, and then also for the new credit card kiosk at the front desk.
Andy, can I ask you? This is sort of like Greek to me, but what is a small form factor?
You're used to the size of a regular desktop computer and what those typically look like, whether they're desktop machines laying horizontally or tower machines, things like that. These new machines are basically replacing these things. They're called small form factor, or another acronym they use is NUC, because they call it the new unit of computing. There's a number of makers, many actually, that make these devices. They've got all the same functionality, all the same power and capability of the full-size desktop systems, but they use much less power, they cost less, they're just the way to go. And so we've basically, you know, landed on a vendor that we like, we've landed on a revision of hardware and things like that that meet our needs very well, so we've adopted those, and those are starting to roll out.
Mm-hmm. Okay, thanks.
Sure. So that's moving right along. Then a number of months ago, we redid our contract with ITS, Intelligent Technical Solutions, which is our IT vendor, and we made some changes to that basically resulted in credits due us from past months. So I've been working on getting all that cleaned up, and we should be getting credited back on those this month. So happy to be able to report that. As I go through and I do these things, one of the things that I've really missed is, you know, we don't have a help desk ticketing software here.
Yeah.
And so we need one. So I'm as I have time, it's not my highest priority by any means at this point, but I'm introducing this project. I'd like to get us a help desk ticketing solution for me in the near term for the IT stuff, but it might be that other areas could use that as well. And then, you know, that's kind of the gist of what I've had going on. There's a number of other projects that need to happen in terms of our networking and things that need to be upgraded this year. I'm working on that, and I'll be talking more about that in the coming in the coming meetings.
Very good, sir.
Thank you.
If I could just jump in and say Andy's far too modest when he says we found these things and we did it. It's really all him. And I just want to give folks a little sense of scale. Andy mentioned, you know, vertical towers or big horizontal things. These new small form devices are about the size of two stacked iPhones, right? They're really tiny. And price-wise, they're like a tenth of the cost of a laptop, you know, so they're tremendous savings. So it enables us to really get everybody to have functional computing equipment at a fraction of the cost. So tip of the hat to Andy for all that work. Thank you.
Very good. Thank you. I notice you're not using one, but that's fine. It's for everybody else. It's not for me. It's for everybody else.
Anything else on staff reports? Anybody have anything to add? Subtract, multiply, divide. Okay. Discussion and information items. Item 10, review the 25-26 operating budget, reserve development, and CIP.
Yeah, so I don't know how deep we want to go into this, given that you talked about it a lot last time, but essentially I have the same proposal. I think the new piece is the CIP. So we can go to that. And that includes proposed, and CIP is the capital improvement plan. And so we have different projects that are recommended in here for a total of $5 million. And they are distributed between water, sewer, and admin. And some of these may sound a little familiar because actually, that first one, the water treatment plant conversion from chlorine to liquid chlorine is, or bleach from hypochlorite. Yeah, I wasn't used to the NaOCl, is in there. And then distribution system improvements, which I believe are related to that throttling valve. Is that the distribution improvements?
Yeah, that's part of it. And okay.
And the SCADA and the other components that...
That and raw water stuff. Yeah, it's an umbrella that he's got different projects on.
Okay. And then the WSC Water Vision Project, which I don't think we've actually received a quote yet from them.
No, I don't think we have. Yep. No.
So that's probably a ballpark. And then this smart meter installation with the AMI tower of 275. If we do get our grant from the feds, I know this is like super optimistic to think that any federal grants would come out, but that could be funded in part with that money. And then I don't know what the water communication update is. Is that related to the radio frequency of the AMI?
No, that is part of the communication between the tanks to the water treatment plant. Because we're on AT&T buried lines, and we lose communication with them. And Rio Oso is not as – I mean, it's important that we get them all. We're just lucky that Rio Oso's got its own PLC there, and it runs on its own. But if we lose communication with Van Fleck Tank, that water plant will never turn off, and it'll just fill. And so we – and the one to Van Fleck is just a phone line that's buried, not even in conduit. It's just direct buried. And so that's that. And then that's going to be the main bulk of it. And then there's communication from other areas that he wants to, like our subdrain pump stations that are around the lakes, communication to the SCADA at the water plant.
Okay.
So.
And then under sewer, there's rehabilitation and backup power for lift stations, $600,000. And then, and I don't know if you were talking about this one as well, another communication update for sewer remote sites.
Yeah, those are for all of the sewer lift stations to go to... we're going to is to send them to the SCADA system back here at the wastewater plant, so we can monitor all of the sewer lift stations. If we have a pump failure, power outage, any of those issues, or we can just monitor how things are going from the SCADA instead of having to go to each one. It was kind of like what, like it, say if we lost the internet for 8 hours because all of the phone lines are you know, are to that, or if we lost the phone communication, instead of having to drive around look at all the lift stations all night long, we could actually have one person just sitting there. So it's part of that communication too.
I have a question, John.
Go ahead.
So on the lift station rehabilitation, but more importantly the backup power, this is to get us off the manual start, and the one I'll use is over off of Cantova.
That is correct. It's for that one.
Because we've pushed this off several years.
Yeah, well, what we've done is we've actually used some of that money that was for this year for other lift stations that for upgrades that needed to be done that was billed to that. So we haven't had a chance to get the generators. I know Michael Fritchie was working on getting an easement over at FAA. I don't know what happened with that. I know we got a drawings. I know we got that that part done. I know we got quotes from the generator people, but it never moved forward because Michael was trying to get that as a package deal. So that is going to be part of that. You know, the Alameda lift station that's being done right now, that's being billed to the current year of the dollars. So this was just, we're going to have to find out where the easement was and where that's going and how that's getting. So the main thing is the two generators for those.
Yep, understood. So. Thank you. Thank you, John.
And then the last item on sewer is $500,000 for the sewer plant automation.
Yeah, they want the SCADA system that we currently have at the water plant, at the wastewater plant. When it was purchased, it was literally, hey, we need a SCADA system here. Give us the cheapest thing you have on the shelf. And that's what was purchased. And I'm not joking about that. That was actually the conversation. And so with they're doing upgrades with this that we have with the hypo conversion that they're going to be putting on this, the current SCADA system, but with the communication to the lift stations and with trying to get a better SCADA system. We can't even acknowledge an alarm thing because the programming won't work. So we're just trying to upgrade that as part of that. So maybe get into the 19th century with our SCADA system. So, sorry.
One century. Maybe that was uncalled for. One century at a time, Travis. Yeah. One century at a time.
And the last item is... a proposed remodel of the kitchen break room, which doesn't really have seating as a break room. There's no break room space, but it is very expensive, and I quite frankly think not very justifiable. I appreciate that staff doesn't have any place nice to go except for the brief window of time between when it stops being cold and it gets super hot out on the back deck. But other than that, it's hard for staff. But since people rarely go out to lunch, that's, you know, eliminates a lot of the problem.
Yeah, there's not, I mean, I looked at that. I mean, you don't have any square footage to work with to begin with.
I think the idea is to encroach upon the file room. And the file room is sort of an antiquated approach to document management. But nevertheless, it's still, we would have to, you know, digitize everything in there to get rid of all that stuff in order to be able to take advantage of that space. And I think that should probably happen first and then come back and, you know, have plans about how to use that space. But that space could also be a much better conference room, you know, a bigger, you know, conference room for for people to use, and then have the little conference room be, you know, an office or something, you know. So there's ways around, I think, or even a slash break room. So I think our first job is to figure out what to do with all that stuff in the file room that is paper in cabinets, and to figure out how to digitize that, and to, you know, go forward with reclaiming that space first before breaking into it with, you know, new walls for a larger break room.
What's the oldest date on something in there?
Oh, I have stuff from the beginning of the...
You're going to tell me 1984, right?
Yeah. I mean, well, I definitely in the vault have all of the original, but I have stuff from the 70s for sure. They go back to EID and the original formation in, you know, Myriad of L.A.
1972.
Yeah. What about the shootout in 1864
you know
at
what?
The consumers?
It's dusty.
Down on the river.
It's the picture the that's on the wall.
Got it. That's been replaced by a plaque.
Yes.
Got it.
Okay. North-south.
Yeah. So this item actually has also... reserve development in there. So, you know, this overall proposal for the CIP is roughly $5 million, give or take. So the reserve, you know, I think there was extensive conversation last month about the elements, sort of the funding streams that go in to create, you know, more reserves, either the property tax or the $14 and, you know, all these different streams of money that then create this bucket for the reserves. But I think annually, it might be like 2.5. I'm forgetting, but this is roughly kind of what the best hope for outcome was, I think, for reserve growth in a year. And so this
2.6 contribution.
$2.6 million contribution. So, and that includes about $900,000 for the property taxes, and then the roughly, you know, all the other specific contributions, and then if there's any net operating revenue. And so this exceeds that, so that means that there would be a net reduction to the reserves. And so I think the whatever the plan ends up being, it has to be weighed against that criteria of whether or not you want to try to maintain a static reserve, or if these things are so compelling that you feel they have to be done in order to avoid, you know, damage to the system, or if they could be put off, you know, things like that. In the current fiscal year, you know, we had those big expenses, those big ticket items that took down the operating expense, and those could have been paid for from reserves. In a way, it's sort of six of one, half dozen of the other, because if operating ends up having an imbalance, it either, you know, it impacts the reserve ultimately. But I think another question is, do we have the wherewithal to get all these projects done in a year? You know, so to the extent that we really want to focus on either maintaining or growing the reserves, I think the CIP should be kind of in that $2.5 million range, you know. But then that requires some decisions to be made about the necessity and the urgency of the particular pieces in that CIP. So that's my two cents on reserves.
Yeah, and the only thing that continues to confuse me or cloud the picture is I understand the inflow, and I understand in the published project list of short-term items that we're going to focus on where those correlate. But as we take something out, in other words, as we complete a project, mm-hmm. is a better way to say it. I mean, I still can't see the relevance of, okay, does that lower, using Loomis as an example, I guess, does that lower our exposure? You know, it just, without understanding, as stuff slides out, knowing what the total CIP or the total necessary projects is, if that number is going down, well, obviously that's good news. But if the number continues to escalate, we're going backwards.
Yeah. So I came from a state program that had hundreds of millions of dollars of deferred maintenance because there just wasn't enough money. This was with the state court system, which had inherited over 700 structures from the counties, and there was just never money to take care of all of the things. And you do face this situation of just this ever increasing, you know, obligation, and it was kind of a run to failure mechanism just because there wasn't enough money. And it's very similar, I think, to the situation which Lumos has you know, created, of like having the visibility of seeing everything you need to replace eventually. And what you have to do is figure out an asset management plan and figure out which things have to be dealt with first in order to keep the system going.
Right.
And that's, prioritize.
That's exactly my point.
Yeah.
That you know, if you've got you know, $10 million or $20 million worth of in-ground sewer, it's obvious that it's not all going to break at the same time, and you're not going to have to allocate money to it in mass to fix.
Yeah. Not all at once. Yeah.
But I'm still not comfortable yet understanding, you know, how good or bad the position is. The other part of that is. I don't know the relationship. The one thing we asked for, I don't think we've seen the result of yet. We were going to, as a result of the steel pipe failure below Clementia, that pipe is the pipe that takes water from the river up to Calero, and it's 2 miles through trails and
boulders
and trees, and uphill and downhill. We were trying to get an idea, because the one fix we did was, you know, $250,000, and we fixed 100 feet?
30, I thought.
No, 30.
15. Oh, 15 feet. Okay. Divide 15 feet into $250,000. That's a lot of money. But I was trying to get an idea, because that's not a CIP project. That, you know,
it's an emergency.
How susceptible is the rest of the line? And we had asked to get an analysis of that, and we haven't done it yet.
Yeah, and I think Eric was going to jump on that. Eric is out sick today, too. So.
Yeah.
I know we were talking with EDCO. We were trying to find, and I don't know if Eric has, because you can't just send a regular camera down there because of the size of the pipe. It's a specialty item that you have to get, because it goes up, it goes down, and we only have two inspection vaults. One is right there where the break was, and one is right there at the corner of Bass Lake, and everything else is closed. So it takes the people that we normally use do not have the equipment, and so it's finding a specialty equipment. I don't know where Eric's at,
yeah, okay.
But I know
okay.
that.
Okay, I just wanted to make sure that it was still on the table.
Yeah.
I mean, we're if we get a rupture in some place that's difficult to get to, and I mean, we're out of business.
Yeah.
We're not moving water.
We also have a lift station that's that has sank in a foot and a half. We actually had to do emergency repair at Green's lift station, but the electrical panel is literally leaning at 1 o'clock from 12 o'clock. It's literally the whole platform, everything is leaning. And so, and I know that's part of that CFP stuff, but if that leans any farther and that whole panel falls, then, you know, these are some of the things, because Eric has said, look, we need to look at the most important stuff because of costs, and that's pretty, because I had a whole list of my, you know, I had my Christmas wish list, but, We were looking at the most, you know, these are, and that lift station's been like that for years.
Yeah, and so, you know, this is good, and it's relevant to what we're doing in a fiscal year, but I think there'd be more of a comfort level in analyzing a bigger chunk.
Right.
Yeah. Okay. Enough said.
At one point you were getting a hold of, hopefully, some piping that was the kind of piping you needed to do more work on that system?
Correct. We looked into that, and I'm going to be honest with you, kind of fell off. I can talk with Eric. I can, if he's okay with it, because the pipe is expensive.
Yeah.
And is it worth getting the pipe, buying it, storing it. Yes, I mean, if we had a break and we had it here, yes, it would be worth it. But, I mean, you could be talking $30,000, $40,000 to buy two 20 sticks of pipe, 20-foot sticks of pipe, to sit somewhere to, you know, for a home for some, you know, for some ducks or something for the next 10 years. And so, and I don't know if he was going to, because I don't think I've even brought it up to him. This was talked about. So I'll bring it up to him, and it might be one of those things. Well, let's see where we're at on the evaluation. But I do believe we should at least have one 20-foot stick here. We got lucky getting that one. There was a place in Yuba City that just happened to have something that was not quite the size, but we were able to make it work.
Go ahead.
One other thing, what
Did
John was saying.
Linda?
I'm sorry. What John was saying about the Loomis report, it's the same thing that happens in my mind. Are we looking at that and connecting that up to what we're doing for CIP? You know, is there a way to pull those things together and accomplish a couple of things at the same time? And I know that's difficult, but is that kind of how you're working?
I don't know how Eric is.
Okay.
Because I'm kind of a little more micro versus the macro, because I think everything's an emergency because I need to keep the water flowing and the wastewater flowing. But then when I'm told to, hey, give me your most desperate, this is what I present to Eric, and then he goes from there. I feel that's my pertinent job is to be micro so he can be macro and stuff. And then so to answer your question, I don't know.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
That's fine.
I'll kick this to the improvements committee, but I thought, and along the lines of what you're asking, Travis, Linda, we had discussion about having certain parts on the shelf.
Correct.
Mm-hmm. Whether it's a pump, whether it's adapter, those types of things. And I don't know, there's never a good time. But having one or two of those sticks, even if they're home to a duck community, as long as they're not endangered,
right,
we're okay, we can still kick them out. But I think that is that bigger picture. As we look at some of the CIP things or the emergency stuff, that's that part. If we were in a better position and had forethought before COVID, we'd be money ahead and selling this stuff to other water districts, right? But I think that there's a minimum stuff that only you are going to know and Eric's going to know that these are the things we need to have.
Mm-hmm.
And it doesn't become a necessity, but is it built into our CIP? Is it built into the reserves? Because to me, it's not money wasted. It's we're ahead of because we know certain things are going to happen. So thank you.
And also too, just on that note, as we're doing these lift station upgrades and rehabs, Eric, we're on the same page. We're buying the pumps that go in there, and we're buying one for the shelf.
Perfect.
So that way we don't run into a problem. And that's Eric's belief, and that's my belief, and so that's the direction we're going from this
Perfect.
Point forward as we're doing
Perfect.
Stuff. But I will talk with Eric and at least start looking for the pipe. I apologize; it kind of fell off my
Travis,
radar.
Stop!
No,
you know. Stop!
Do not.
I can only do so much, man.
No, but
I'm more concerned about the ducks.
Yeah,
I really
so. I will get with Eric when he gets back and start moving
That's
forward
okay.
on that.
Yeah. Yeah.
Bert, thank you, Travis. Mm-hmm.
So a couple comments, question. To the question of whether or not we're making a dent in
reserves,
in replacement of existing that the reserves are meant for, I look at most of these items, the communications, the SCADA, these are all improvements to existing. These aren't replacements that you'll find in the Loomis report. So of the $5 million, very little of this would make a dent in what we should have in our reserves. Mimi hit on most of the questions that I would have for Eric, and that is, well, in the overall, we can't spend $5 million this year and only be putting $2.6 million into the fund. We don't have $2.4 million sitting in the fund that we can continually take out year after year before the fund is depleted and we have nothing to replace our existing stuff. So what I would have asked Eric is, what is the where is the priority here? And to what you said, how much of this could we really get done in this fiscal year? We're not going to spend $1.5 million on this chlorine situation this year because it's just physically impossible to get the bids out and get the work done and all that. So I think what I would suggest is that this proposed CIP budget gets moved to improvements and we have an in-depth discussion about all this. What's our priority? What's the schedules look like? And let's at least get it down underneath the $2.6 million contribution that we're going to make this year.
I'll add that to the agreement
with Jefferson. Thank you.
The other part of that, and I agree with that, is in the case using it as an example, using the $250,000 for the piece of steel that we replaced. If we're gonna treat those as operational expenses, and understanding that every time we have one, it does to the bottom line what it did this year. Do we have I don't know what you call it, a breakdown fund? Do we have an unforeseen
contingent reserve?
Oh, wow. Yeah. There's a lot of letters in that.
I can't spell it.
Yeah. But it's great. I like that. Yeah. Is it something we ought to have?
Well, I think you have that essentially in your unrestricted reserve bucket. Right. So we've talked about like the 15 different reserve buckets that are out there. And so really that, but collectively, it's still, you know, like $15 million or whatever, right? But the unrestricted is the one that doesn't have, you know, like fences around it that says, okay, you can only use this for whatever, water or water replacement. And so that gives you the ability to tackle your emergencies. But the problem is, you know, it's just not enough. I mean, I think the real answer is grow your reserves. That's the thing.
But the other part of that too, if you're gonna, if we want to draw on unrestricted reserves to fix these problems, that's okay. But like in the case of the steel pipe, why didn't we do that?
Well,
just hit the operating budget.
To me, it's more like in accounting. Yeah, it's going to come out of your operating expenses first, right? Because it wasn't budgeted in the CIP, and that'll just reduce the net income or loss or increase the loss, whatever it is, right? But that net income or loss is what goes into the unrestricted reserve. So they're very interconnected.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's mildly helpful to, you know, charge it maybe directly to the reserve because then it's off budget, but you lose the visibility of seeing it and talking about it and kind of recognizing that these things happen and they just help you with the overall understanding of managing the resources. So it's a timing thing. I mean, I think ultimately whatever is, you know, the residual from an operating year, that'll go into your unrestricted. But if you could have it charged directly from there, but you
lose
that.
Well, it will, yeah. If you get lucky and you don't have any major
yeah.
expenses.
Yeah. But you could also do just a budget augmentation mid-year and say, we're going to move money from here to here in order to cover this, you know, this unexpected expense.
Yeah.
If you were really that concerned about being in the black, but
yeah, and I'm not. It's not like, you know, we're dishing the money in the black out to the shareholders. which is where I come from. But it does allow us and the community to focus, I think, in real time on where we actually are. Okay, it's not, you know. The jerks across the street are $250,000 in the hole, and you spend the year justifying that or explaining that. I'd always, you know, we're essentially cost and revenue balance is the target of every CSD on the planet, and you know you're supposed to spend what you take in and vice versa. Mm-hmm. It just makes it, in my mind, makes it more realistic, but maybe it's philosophical, I don't know. But
I mean, one thing I haven't seen in this budget is, or in many of these district budgets anywhere, is kind of like a fund for, like an expense that's for like replacement costs. And I know we've got the $2, $14, the surcharges that are on people's accounts, but in the budget line, there could be expenses that are kind of like a, like you have a depreciation expense in
yeah,
whatever.
Right.
But you could build in an expense that would be every year, because truly what happens with accounting is you have some costs that are very easy to track. You have an invoice or whatever, and then you have these other costs where over the years you're paying for those things, but you may have paid for it up front, and so you have to recover or you have to build to the next year. So we can take a look at that and talk about that kind of thing, putting in a line item for, you know, replacement costs of big items in the budget. Because then what you're really trying to do is match the revenue and fees with the actual cost.
That's
so
correct.
Sometimes
That's
it's hard to get the actual cost because not all those things are, you know, tangible. So, but we can put a little more effort into that to try to figure out.
We're locked into what we're doing now. I mean, we got a 218 notice, so.
Yeah. For 25, 26,
long range discussion.
It's kind of done. But that's a great segue to our next topic.
Which is, if I can find my place, changes to insurance.
Yeah.
Dam and total insured value for specified items.
So the first thing that's in the packet are the three dam inundation studies that Eric put in there.
Right.
That give you like a picture of if the dam broke, where the floods would be. And it's on this page in particular.
But this can only occur on a sunny day.
Yeah.
Right?
Does anybody see the irony in this?
Before we get into this, did we take a public comment on the last item? Yes, we can.
I had no public comment.
Oh, okay. There was no pump? Nothing in the basket.
Okay.
Okay. So do you want to start there with this? Because this was like, I don't know what floods and what doesn't from reading this.
So do you want to talk about the inundation? I didn't have any.
Travis, do you know more about the inundation study than I do?
I don't know anything about it, to be honest with you. I just know that we're due for our five-year dam survey this year.
Whoa, watch your language.
I apologize for the darn dam survey. Because they're done every 5 years.
Yeah, okay.
But that's about all I'm working on, so I'm not aware of this. Sorry.
Do you want to work our way through this, or do you want to save this for...
I say we have it, John, and then if we digest it, then we bring it back next month to Eric.
Okay.
And have him go through it instead of us trying to... I appreciate the color and stuff.
I'm uncertain as to which bridge the water goes under and which bridge the water goes over.
Right.
I know.
Your house, it goes over.
Yeah, right. All right.
So we can talk about Eric's comfort level with not having the darn dam insurance, because he was comfortable with that. And I should explain, what we're talking about here is just overall insurance from the GSRMA pool. for property damage, and the dam insurance, or I should say the dam coverage, has always been an exclusion to the regular property coverage. And the district, for several years, like at least four or five, I think, purchased a separate policy for dam coverage that was about $11,000 up until 24, 25. And then GSRMA's costs increased to about $24,000, but they didn't find that out until like September. So they were like, we're just going to give you it for $11,000 because that's what we told you it was going to be. But this year, the dam coverage is closing in on $47,000 or something like that. Mm-hmm. And so Eric said, you know, looked at the inundation studies and felt comfortable that with an earthen dam, the chances of anything really bad happening to it are minimal. And so the idea would be to just not get that special dam policy this year. And then in addition to that, there was some other conversation that occurred with GSRMA about the potential to shift some property items over to a high value list, which is like 20 cents per million or 20 cents per
$100 is the high value items.
So it's 20 cents per thousand less than the not so high value items, which are like at 33. But apparently there's like a higher deductible, you know,
25,000
yeah, for that. But we took a look at and just to be honest, I wasn't involved in the specifics of it, of choosing these items, but staff came up with a list of 32 items that could be eliminated and be self-insured rather than being, you know, paid for through insurance. And the total of those items would be about $42,640 for the regular property and then about $17.7 for the high. So that's about $60, and then the foregoing the dam is about 47, so that would save about 107. And I don't know what numbers of these, you know, Mark had put into the original budget. I mean, it's kind of a drop in the bucket compared to the overall budget, but you get the sense that, you know, what we're trying to do is not pay for things that don't really offer a lot of value. Like, for example, the fire hydrants was in here, and it was insured at like $817,000, but a fire hydrant really is only about, how much is it, $5,000 or less for one fire hydrant?
Oh, for the...
For just the equipment.
Yeah, for the fire hydrant itself, it's like $1,200.
Yeah.
So and you know, for and then you've got the pipe and the breakaway.
Unless a car jumps out in front of it.
And yeah. Which happens frequently here.
And then, yeah. Too, in a flood, you really don't need fire hydrants.
Yeah.
Let me ask you this, though. It seemed to me in reading this, and I don't dispute any of that logic, that our real exposure in a catastrophe, and maybe the catastrophe is more real around water plant operations for whatever reason than it would be around dams. I don't know if this world has what we used to call, in my world, business interruption. Mm-hmm. I mean, if you know, for example, if the water plant went down, and I'm not talking, you know, we have to go replace a PC. I'm talking about if we have a fire or, mm-hmm. or some catastrophic event that precludes us processing water. What, for example, are the costs to support 6,000 people, you know, with water from Costco, or water from from trucks that we have to deliver to some part of the system so we can get it into people's homes? I see that as more risk than a dam burst.
I agree. And so I think our job is really to try to mitigate as much risk as we can. And there's different ways to mitigate risk. One is to purchase risk mitigation, which is insurance. And then the other is to evaluate your systems and then take action to make sure that they are as sound as they can possibly be. Like we had that conversation in finance last week about the flammability of the water treatment plant and the surrounding you know, dry grasses and whatnot. And so to the extent that we spend our money fixing those things as opposed to buying insurance, we're probably ahead of the game on some of these things.
Right, yeah, I agree.
That's kind of the thinking on this. It's, you know, kind of a small savings in the scheme of things, but the insurance rates have really increased over the years, and I think I had that report in the January board meeting packet that kind of showed, you know, the increase there. So this is, and it's not just the district that has increasing insurance costs. I think the, you know, the global situation with fire and other disasters like, you know, Lahaina, Palisades, all those things are just sort of hurting the insurance industry. And so it's a rough time. But these are things that staff kind of kicked the tires on and thought, well, this isn't really gaining us much. So it's a proposal. It's not an action item because it's not necessarily something that requires board action. But in light of prior curiosity about all this, you know, it's brought forth.
Well, it, you know, going forward too, like I said, it's not going to impact what we're doing here looking in the short term. But if, you know, if somebody at some point wants to put an analysis together, I mean, I'd be interested to see that. I mean, I'm you know, and I like I said, I think the whatever the term is here, the business interruption part of this is something that long term we should take a look at.
Yeah, and I think in government it's called continuity of operations, right. You know, COOPCOG kind of things. And I think it's a very good idea to have that. And just with the fire hydrant situation with your cars that jump out in front of them, I think that from what I've heard, from what Eric and I have talked about, like, there's now in place shutoff valves, because a large portion of the cost of that was the lost water and whatnot. And so having visibility into your system so you know where you can shut things off when something like that happens so you don't have loss of treated water is really helpful. On the whole treatment plant going down, well, yeah, that's like, you know, perfect storm kind of stuff. But it's worth thinking about and thinking about how you harden the resiliency. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. And it's out there. I mean, a lot of times on bond issues are required that you have some type of business interruption insurance or contingency or whatever. So
yeah.
Because the bondholders want to be secured if you're not getting payments.
Right. repair to the CIA ditch.
Yeah. So the last nice little rain event we had, we got...
And Travis, give you a heads up, we talked about this already a little bit at improvements about the first approval of the overall $75,000 in repairs to the CIA ditch. Mm. And so it's been talked about a little bit, but I just so you know that...
Okay. This was just after the water... came down over by what we call the S-turns. There was some cracks in the ditch that was created by the heavy flow. There's actually some cracks over by Mr. Janko's front fence, and so we, about five of us, went over there to look at them, and they figured that for the $74,312, they're going to gunite a good section of that. They're also clearing out trees that are going over it and that have been knocked down during the last flood. Obviously, a third of that cost belongs to the district.
Right.
This was talked and discussed, and I know that Mr. Pearson spoke with Mimi to give her the breakdown, and they were able to get the job done and a few other things that were found once the ditch was walked. for under the $75,000. And I know that there's been discussion, Jeff has discussed with Mimi about other repairs that should be done, not 100% up on that, but this was just for the emergency repair of where it was leaking over there by the S's.
Okay.
So. And this is below the spending authority of the general manager, but we brought it to the attention of the improvements committee, I think. I couldn't remember if it was improvements or finance. And I think the only other thing that I want to throw out there is that there is a portion of that irrigation canal or ditch which is not lined, and so then it has the potential to just have seepage, and then that's lost water. So there might be some value down the road in thinking about lining that so we don't lose this precious resource of water. And Eric had actually suggested that that canal could be lined with like our sludge that is very dense, almost clay-like. I haven't run that by Jeff yet, but that's apparently...
You got to be really careful there because you get down to where they start moving that water onto agricultural property, you're violating organic licensing.
So no sludge.
We've been there, done that.
Okay.
We've been there, done that.
Well, so at any rate, some kind of a liner in order to make sure the water gets where it's intended to go without, you know, getting lost along the way. So maybe that's just kind of food for thought to think about for future. And that's kind of the CIA ditch. I don't know if Mr. Pearson had any additional thoughts or comments on that.
No, I just wanted to make myself available.
Okay.
Okay. All right.
So our portion is 70, or I mean,
it's 25.
Yeah, it's a third.
Yep.
Get $24,999. I saved you a dollar.
Yes, you did.
There have traditionally been some arguments over.
I understand, so I just want to make sure.
Over the history of this 1924 ditch. Item 13, do we need to do more on this?
I don't think so. I think we're at the point where we're ready to, you know, have whoever wants to be involved in negotiations with Cal Waste from the board to make me aware of your interest and then kind of figure out a plan on how to go forward with that proposed local dumping, which might take about 9 to 12 months to actually be viable. That's the one that achieves various higher level savings because of not having the round trip to Yolo, which is also environmentally better to not have to have a big old truck drive all that way. So there's that, but not a lot of potential for savings, unfortunately, on that one. I don't know if you had any other thoughts while you were sitting there, Rudy.
No.
I don't want to touch it. No.
That's why I'm here. I mean, I can, except for you guys. You want to talk about it more?
I think we know where we are. Anybody have any questions? Anything?
And I did recently have a Zoom call with the Cal Recycle folks, who are the folks who gave us the waiver, but then who are also responsible for our policing on other issues that are related to SB 1383. And those include procurement of products with a certain level of recycled content. And so they want to come out and visit and make sure that we're doing what we're supposed to in that regard. And a quick review of our code on procurement showed that we did not really add that in to the code when the ordinance was created for SB 1383, and it's not in the body of SB 1383's ordinance, so I think that'll be like next month that we kind of do that and make sure that we're in compliance with what the recycled content requirements are, just to stay in their good graces.
Is this a secret dumpster dive? Is this what this is?
It should be, but it's not.
Okay, yeah. Like, you know, you're going to work in the morning and there's somebody upside down in a can, like counting stuff. We have done that here.
So, yeah. So, maybe I can help.
Come on in.
Yeah. So, part of you guys getting the waiver is, you know, the district no longer has to do the route audits that we had to do last year, where we had people out here in golf carts and right. flipping lids and, you know, kind of crazy. But the district no longer has to do that because you have this waiver. And then it kind of comes back to talking to Mimi about, we just need some direction from the board on the service level that we want to maintain. There's a few options out there. We prefer to do that, you know, maybe not in this setting, to come up with a rate. But she mentioned about the procurement requirements. So with a lot of normal cities, like cities have to buy so much organic material, i.e. compost. So like the city of Galt, for example, has to buy roughly 90 tons of compost a year, and there's not enough softball fields and medians and whatnot to put that on in the city. But there's programs out there that can help with those requirements. The state has been, they didn't really consider special districts when they put this law into effect, so they're just trying to figure it out a little bit. And then there's a recovered food mandate with the state. Normally in a jurisdiction, they'd say, okay, there's 10 restaurants in the city, so these restaurants need to donate this amount of food to food banks and of that sort. With the district, you guys don't regulate any restaurants, so that's something that I think CalRecycle's going to come out and, I mean, we spoke briefly about this, but I'm not sure where it's going to go. But we can assist in any way to the district. I have, you know, we have experience talking to them about this stuff. So whatever you guys need from us, we're here to help. So.
Okay. Thanks, Rudy. Appreciate it.
Can we let Rudy go home?
Yeah.
Rudy, go.
Go home.
Go Kings.
Yeah, don't stay. Thank you, Rudy. Appreciate your time.
Kings are doing
Oh, yeah. So we move on.
I assume we have no comments, right?
Yeah.
We have no comments.
No public comments.
Thank you. Okay,
thank you.
Item 14, approved non-represented employee salary survey.
So I would imagine this was something that Mark worked on, or maybe Eric. I'm not sure. It was in personnel. Mm-hmm. And then it was on the agenda last board meeting, but it was pulled, and so it's back on the agenda. And it's, I believe it's a salary schedule that was established after a survey of regional districts with similar positions. And so I didn't do that work, but that's about the extent of what I know about that.
Do we move it again until we have Mark and Eric?
Yes.
Yes?
I think so, yeah.
So is there a motion then to table it? Or?
Put it up for, what month is this? Okay. Put it up for May.
I'll second it.
Okay, so that was a motion for Mr. Merchant?
Yeah, mm-hmm. It has to be because he seconded it.
Okay, and then Tim, awesome, roll call vote. Unless there's public comment, discussion, Director Butler?
Yes.
Director Jacob?
Aye.
Director Meade?
Aye.
Director Merchant?
Yes.
Thank you.
Board introduction and waiving of the first reading of the ordinance 2025-1, adding Section 10 to Chapter 21 of the District Code, impose a fee for barcode stickers for the security gates and making a determination of exemption under CEQA.
So I think this is a do-over of the initial introduction of this back in October?
December, I think.
Yeah. Oh, December? Yeah. December.
We have to say that to me again?
It's a do-over. Yeah. It's a technical term. You do it over when you have a so it's, I'll be serious, sorry.
No, so we have to, we can't.
We have to start over.
Waive it, we have to.
We have to start all over because of the time frame.
Okay.
It was too long of a time frame.
So we got to do the first reading, or we can waive the first reading and approve the ordinance.
Right.
And then it will come back to you in May for the second
reading. For the second reading.
To actually adopt the ordinance.
So we can still waive the reading.
Yeah, you can always waive the reading.
Right.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
Unanimously. Unless one of you want to read the whole ordinance.
I'm good.
So somebody, does someone want to move?
I will move to waive the first reading of ordinance 02025-01, adding section 10 to chapter 21 of the district code to impose a fee for barcode stickers for the security gates and making a determination of exemption under CEQA.
And I'll second that.
Thank you, Director Jacob and Director Merchant.
So we need a roll call vote, yes?
Director Mather?
Yes.
Director Jacob?
Aye.
Director Mady?
Aye.
And Director Merchant.
Yes.
Thank you.
Just a quick question. Mr. Enright, so it would take effect immediately or the following month? Because I think when we had it in December, it was going to be like a January or whenever we could get it started.
So
it wouldn't be tied to the fiscal year, I guess is what I'm getting
right.
to.
Right.
No, they said July.
It's actually 30 days.
Oh,
30
did it
days.
Say July in here?
Yeah, and I think
yeah.
the idea is...
Yeah, the renewal fee will appear on the June monthly service bill sent out on or around July 1st.
Right.
In
okay.
the initial year, and on the monthly service bill sent on or around January 1st. Every year there
That's where I got confused. Perfect. Yeah. Thank
okay.
you.
Okay. Action item number 16, approve updated costs for the water treatment plant 2 rehab project.
So we have the initial rehab project that was a CIP project. Once the media was removed and we had an inspection done by a representative of the company that actually built the filter bed, they found several other items that need to be replaced. As part of that packet, there was pictures of items. There's springs that are out of alignment. We have wheels that are out of alignment. The hood that goes over each of them are out of alignment. Pegs. I mean, there's just a lot of
all the photos.
Yeah, there's just a lot of things that could not be seen until the media was removed. And so, if we don't do these, and then we just put the new media back in, we're going to have to remove the media again and do it again. So, because Plant 2 is our workhorse. And we rely on that so much.
That's the oldest plant.
That's the old plant, and that's the one that takes care of our manganese the best. My hope, and then we is that we get this approved. We took it to the improvements committee, and it was moved forward. But these are items that have to be done, and part of this you'll see is. We're having the representative come out 2 days during this project to help with alignments and specs and make sure that some of the things are done properly. And then 2 days at the end of it for startup and adjustments of pumps and stuff to make sure that everything's back in alignment. Mm-hmm. So
it's kind of like meeting your service advisor at Honda. That's what it reminded me of
pretty
when
much.
I was reading it. Yeah.
Yep.
Well, you got to do this, but you really
You really should do this.
Yeah. But anyway, we did move it forward. I'll make a motion that we approve it.
Second.
Okay. Is this a public comment?
All in favor, deal, or is this a roll call?
It's your discretion, sir.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Item 17, approve updated utilities supervisor
and
job description.
I'll take that one.
Okay.
You saw that Ron Greenfield has left us, and that's left us with a hole. And so we want to backfill for his position as soon as possible. So this job description has had just a few updates from things that have happened in the last couple of years, changing it to include a designation for the Water Resources Control Board, and then having also cross-connection and backflow requirements, that kind of thing, and computer expertise. So there's just a few tiny updates to the job description, but we'd like your approval of it so that we can get it posted.
Comments?
Do we think we have candidates in-house for this?
Possibly.
Okay. Kim?
They have to. I heard they have to shave their head to get the job. So, kind of narrows it down.
Some of us don't have to shave. We're getting there. Yeah. It's coming very quick.
I just thought I wouldn't mention that, though.
Wear a hat.
I'd be a little PC today.
I'm good. Thank you.
I read it. I have no problems.
No, anybody? They're fine.
I'll make a motion to accept.
I'll second it.
Okay, do you want to do roll call or?
Yeah, go ahead.
Okay, roll call. Director Butler?
Yes.
Director Jacobs?
Aye.
Director Mady?
Aye.
And Director Merchant?
Yes.
Thank you.
Director comments and suggestions, anybody?
Thank you to staff.
Yeah, thanks for filling in, Travis.
I have a question.
Okay.
What do we do with these?
All right. It's a gift. Yeah,
it's we a got gift.
It too. Just in time for the Boy Scout shredding.
For late night reading.
I need a motion to adjourn.
I move to adjourn.
Second there. All in favor.
Randy, you're my second, or was it John?
Tim.
Are you kidding me? I'm ready to stay all night.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Okay. Thank you, everyone. We are adjourned.